Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, August 20th, 2015. The U.S. pressures South Sudan's government to sign the peace deal by proposing a U.N. arms embargo on the country.
If the parties sign and, importantly, implement a peace deal.
And the government's information minister criticizes the AU for criticizing President Kiir for refusing to sign that deal on Monday.
The statement of Her Excellency is very unfortunate because she was a party to the decision that we made. And the government of South Sudan initialed the agreement with reservations and concerns.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States wants the UN Security Council to impose an arms embargo on South Sudan after President Salva Kiir surprised the rebels and observers on Monday by refusing to sign the IGAD Plus proposed peace agreement. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir in New York says the U.S. circulated a draft resolution last night to council members on the proposed arms embargo.
What the draft resolution says is that if the parties sign and, importantly, implement a peace deal by September 6th, then the paragraphs of the resolution triggering the arms embargo and the new sanctions on new individuals will not go into effect. But, you know, they may sign, but as we've seen so many times before in South Sudan, deals are signed but not respected. So they're saying it must be signed and implemented.
Right. I understand from a draft resolution some words with reporters from the New Zealand ambassador, Gerard Van Bohemen.
Yes, the New Zealand ambassador spoke to the press last night, and he said they hope to have a vote very, very soon on this resolution, which has been echoed by several other ambassadors this morning to us. He said it's a technical resolution, and they would have to look it over and, you know, get everyone on the same page. But he had only just received it last night when he spoke about it, so he hadn't really gone into too much detail.
I'm curious, does the draft resolution mention Kiir by name?
No, the resolution, from what I understand from one of the UN diplomats, there are three new names in the annex, but I haven't seen the annex, so I can't tell you who they are. From the reaction I get from diplomats, I don't believe that it's Salva Kiir or Riek Machar, who are among the three new names that have been proposed for sanctions. But like I said, if everyone implements, the idea is this should be a pressure tool to get the parties to sign,
right,
and to implement, of course. And so if they do it, they won't be subject to these penalties. But if they don't, the arms embargo will be effective as of September 6th for a period of 1 year. And member states of the UN that find arms, that, you know, search and seize arms from shipments that are headed to South Sudan, will have the power to seize and dispose of them.
Right.
So
we'll
see if that's implemented. So, you know, don't forget, we have a lot of factors going on in the Security Council. You have the Chinese, who are a permanent member. They have the veto power.
Right. I was just going to ask you about that. I'm hearing that even though China often votes against the U.S. when it comes to these kinds of U.N. Security Council resolutions, in this situation with South Sudan, they are pretty supportive. Is that right?
I think it's a little too early to say for certainty. We didn't see the Chinese ambassador this morning go into the council, so we couldn't ask him directly about it. But as everyone knows, China is very heavily invested in South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
They have an interest in seeing the country be stable and at peace. So hopefully they wouldn't block it. You know, they could withhold their veto and just abstain if they didn't want to show great support. But the Chinese on arms embargoes are not always supportive, so it'll be interesting to see whether they accept it or not. Late last night, the UN diplomats who do all the technical work on these resolutions, they're called experts, they had a meeting to go over the resolution. They're meeting again today. As I mentioned, they'd like to see this voted on quickly because, you don't forget, we're working within this 15-day time frame, too, to make it effective. You need to vote on it soon.
Right, which would make it September 1st, actually, right, that Mr. Kiir has until he has to sign that document, sign the peace agreement?
Right. It says in the actual resolution that things wouldn't go effect into in the current draft. It says none of these measures would go into effect until the 6th of September, but there was mention of the earlier date. But basically, none of these measures would go into effect until the 6th. That could change, though. You know, don't forget, they meet, they discuss, and maybe the date is something that might have to be compromised on, too.
And what about Russia? What is the behind-the-scenes talk about what Russia's going to do?
Traditionally, the dynamic on the Security Council is that Russia and China support one another on issues that are important to them. So whatever China decides on this, Russia would go along. So if China is going to abstain, Russia will abstain. If China is going to support it, Russia will support it. Because South Sudan is not particularly of great interest to Russia, so they're likely to support their allies in the council.
That's VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir speaking to me today from New York. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, meanwhile, spoke by phone with President Kiir yesterday about the incomplete peace deal for South Sudan. It's unclear who called whom, but State Department spokesman John Kirby says President Kiir had reassuring news for Kerry.
And President Kiir assured the secretary that he has every intention of signing the peace agreement. He said he needed a couple more days of consultations, but that he made it very clear that it was his intention to sign. So that's obviously encouraging. Obviously, it's the action of signing that matters more than the pledge to do so. But I did want to make that clear.
Did he explain what was holding him up?
He just expressed that he had some concerns that have been addressed now to the degree where he feels. Like he'll be able to sign. I think there's, as he said, there's a couple more days of consultations he wants, some additional questions, but he does not believe that they will hold him up or prevent him from eventually signing.
That was State Department spokesman John Kirby speaking to reporters yesterday in Washington. A group of ESPLM members who say they're part of the ESPLA's High Coordination Committee League called a news conference today in Juba to show their support for President Kiir and his refusal to sign the IGAD peace deal on Monday. The League is calling on citizens across the country to stage a protest tomorrow against the agreement. League Representative Simon Machuar told reporters that the IGAD agreement is not in the best interests of the South Sudanese people.
We, the members of Higher Coordination Committee of SPLM Leagues, workers, lawyers, teachers, professionals, farmers, traders, chiefs, women and students in the Republic of South Sudan, we are rejecting the agreement being imposed on us by IGAD, and we treat it as the conspiracy agreement against our political wills as a sovereign state.
Machuar says the League is also calling on the evacuation of forces associated with the United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, and to move IGAD's headquarters to South Africa.
We demand the transfer of IGAD headquarters from Addis to South Africa as the neutral state. We reject the power sharing in the states of South Sudan. We reject the demilitarization of Juba and two armies.
Rebel leader Riek Machar and former political detainee Pagana Moom signed the deal on Monday. President Kiir told IGAD he wanted 15 days more to consult with his people as to whether or not he should sign the agreement. Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report from Juba. As you know, the opposition leader Machar and former detainee Amoom signed that deal in Addis on Monday's deadline. Machar said he signed to try to alleviate the suffering of the people. It was reported that Amoom signed on behalf of the government. My colleague John Tanza spoke with Pagana Moom today to find out why he agreed to the deal.
I signed this agreement because the people of South Sudan are demanding for peace and they want an end to this war. This devastating, senseless war that has been destroying South Sudan and the people of South Sudan. And peace is what our people want now. That is why we, in the SPLM leaders, former political detainees, took the decision to sign this agreement. Actually, we took the decision to sign this agreement after having discussed with the chairman of SPLM and the president of the republic, President Salva Kiir, and agreed with him that we will come to Addis Ababa to sign a peace agreement and to engage Dr. Riek Machar to make sure that he also signed his peace agreement.
And what happened when you all came to Addis Ababa? What happened? What made President Kiir not to sign?
We came with agreement with President Kiir to sign a peace agreement. We came and engaged to Riek Machar to sign this peace agreement. And what happened is a disappointment that President Kiir changed his mind and decided not to sign.
We are hearing a news report that you are saying that you would not go to Juba if President Kiir did not sign this agreement. Is that true?
There is a change of position in Juba that made President Salva Kiir not to sign. And there is a mobilization against peace by the government or by the spokesperson in Juba. And so now Juba has become a hostile territory to peace. And there are a lot of mobilization against peace and against those who have signed the peace agreement. And they have succeeded to change the position of President Kiir not to sign the agreement. So basically, Juba now has become a place of warmongering and mobilization against peace by those elements in the government of South Sudan. Therefore, Juba is a hostile place as we speak. I will only return to Juba after the peace agreement is signed. Between now and the time when President Kiir comes to Juba, we will be engaged in mobilizing our people to make sure that President Kiir comes back to Addis Ababa to sign this agreement.
Are you protesting because President Kiir refused to sign the agreement? That's why you will stay in Addis Ababa until he comes back?
We are not protesting. We are mobilizing for peace. And in Juba now, the ascending voices are the voices of warmongers and people against peace. So what do we have decided? Is to mobilize for peace. We are talking to our people inside the country. We are talking to the region. We are talking to the international community to mobilize for peace and to make sure that President Kiir returns to Addis Ababa to come and sign the peace agreement so that we can then go back home to implement this peace agreement and build peace in South Sudan.
Yes, when you say we, are you talking as former political detainees or you are talking as the SPLM secretary?
Yes, we are talking as SPLM leaders. Former political detainees, yes, which is an SPLM faction of the three factions that signed the Arusha Agreement.
But you have been reinstated into the SPLM mainstream in Juba. Why do you still align yourself with the former political detainees?
No, I have not. I was not reinstated to SPLM mainstream. I was reinstated to the reunified SPLM. I was the Secretary General of all the SPLM before it split it into three factions. And that is the position I have been reinstated to. I am not the Secretary General of SPLM in government. And my mission is to work to reunify the SPLM through the implementation of the Arusha Peace Agreement. That is what took me to Juba as per the Arusha Agreement. And I have not joined the SPLM in government, which is one of the factions. We went to Juba, and I have been reinstated leading the SPLM leaders, former political detainees, with the team that was to meet and engage with the SPLM leadership in government and their team so that we reunite as one SPLM.
The people of South Sudan are looking.
That was Pagana Moom speaking from Addis Ababa to my colleague John Tanza earlier today. South Sudan's government is criticizing the African Union Commission chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma for saying the warring parties will bring disaster on themselves and the region if no peace deal is signed to end the country's 20-month-old war. Information Minister Michael McQuay says his government still has concerns about security arrangements and spoke to James Buddy.
The statement of Her Excellency is very unfortunate because she was a party to the decision that we made. And the government of South Sudan initialed the agreement with reservations and concerns. And that after the 15 days, the government would come back and negotiate all the outstanding issues before the signing of the agreement. The this was done with her full knowledge. And as such, I'm surprised that she's talking as if she was not a party to all this that took place in Addis.
But she said that the deal that was on the table, the one you did not sign, was a balanced document whose faithful and effective implementation by all the parties would enable them to find a lasting solution to the conflict.
We said this is not a final document, and she's one of the people who accepted that, yes, this is not a final document. Government of South Sudan, go and consult with your people and come back in the 15th day so that you come and resume negotiation with the rebels on the outstanding issues. How does she expect us to sign the final agreement?
Let me say I spoke to a rebel spokesman who said that your government did not sign the agreement because you are afraid of power sharing.
That is relevant. That is immaterial. Power sharing is not an issue. Our friend is with the security. Because after all, if the question of power sharing, government has a majority, whether in Upper Great Upper Nile or in the states or at the national level. Why should we fear power sharing? Our problem is the security arrangements, which is connected with the integrity and the sovereignty of the government of South Sudan and the people of South Sudan. This is our concern.
Why is security a concern to you? You don't want to form a united army?
It is a concern because it is unacceptable, and it has never happened anywhere whereby the sovereignty of a state, the security of a state, the security of the government, and the head of the an elected president, and all these are handed over to a foreign element.
But Riek Machar and his supporters are not foreign elements.
What is Riek Machar after all? Riek Machar is just a rebel who is not elected. He was appointed by President Trump in order to be his vice president. Riek Machar has no right to dismantle an existing system and hand over the integrity and the sovereignty of the state.
But your government negotiated. Why did you not say that?
We said that to the mediators, and the mediators are adamant. They are not listening to us. They are not even introducing the issues that we agreed on with the rebels.
That's Michael McQuay, South Sudan's information minister, speaking to VOA's James Buddy yesterday from the capital, Juba. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A South Sudanese journalist is killed in Juba overnight. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
which do you prefer, locally brewed beer or imported beer?
I like made in Cameroon. You know, I've consumed a few quantities from different countries, but you know, it's a matter of taste. You know, beer, Cameroon has very good beer. I like it, but I don't equally discard. It's good to always blend.
Locally made beer, anyone can go, but the ones that come from outside, I prefer the one inside because I prefer that the money stays in here, or to encourage those who are doing it here at home, because that is the force of Nigeria. They consume what is prepared by them. So I believe we should do so rather than consuming what is from outside.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese journalist was shot and killed last night in Juba. Moy Peter Julius is the seventh journalist to be killed in South Sudan this year. The body of the political reporter for the corporate newspaper was found in a residential neighborhood in Juba. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports, police say Peter was shot several times.
Relatives of Peter mourn the loss of their son and brother this morning at Juba Teaching Hospital. The body of the 27-year-old reporter was taken to the hospital after being found in Korok, a residential area located southwest of Juba town. Peter had been shot several times, including in the back and leg. Police say his personal possessions, including his phone, identification papers and money, were not taken. Julius Kilong is the father of the slain reporter. He was at work when he got a call to say that his son had been shot dead.
I was for night shift. So I worked my night shift up to morning. Then I received a call that my son, Moi, has been shot dead. We got him, he has been shot just behind here, then he fell.
Peter was murdered just 3 days after President Kiir said any journalist who works against the interest of South Sudan will be killed.
The freedom of press does not mean that you work against your country. And if anybody among them does not know that this country has killed people, we will demonstrate it one day on them.
The editor of the corporate newspaper, Ejulu Dani, says Peter interviewed the director of the Center of Peace and Development Studies at the University of Juba before he was killed.
That was one of the assignments that given him. He was going to interview Dr. Luka Byong on the issues concerning the economy. He told me he would not return, and he went. That was the last time I saw him. So the next day, I was expecting to see him this morning, only for other colleagues to call me and inform me that he was shot dead last night at 8 p.m.
Peter is the seventh journalist to be killed this year in South Sudan. Five journalists died in a roadside ambush in Western Baragazal in January, and another journalist was killed in Jonglei State in May. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
And Waki Simon Wudu contributed to that report from Juba. Media advocates and rights groups say Peter's death illustrates just how dangerous it is to work as a journalist in South Sudan.
Today is Peter, tomorrow is somebody else. So please, journalists, we are taking this serious because we have been collected one by one. And I appeal to all the media houses. I appeal to all the journalists in the Republic of South Sudan to lay down their pens and papers and cameras and have 3 days mourning.
That was Oliver Modi, the chairman of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan. The veteran journalist Alfred Taban is head of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS. He says Peter's death is more than an attempt to silence one journalist.
We really condemn this kind of action very greatly because this is not going to help improve the atmosphere for journalists in this country. And we condemn it very much, and we call on the authorities to find out the killers of Peter Moi as soon as possible.
Tom Rhodes is the East Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists, or CPJ. He says the Constitution of South Sudan is supposed to protect freedom of the press. He spoke with South Sudan in Focus reporter Ian Bior.
It is rather foreboding, but it's too early to tell what has happened to Peter. But it shows a worrying sign and a worrying trend when we see that the president on Sunday afternoon threatening to kill journalists before departing to Addis. And then Wednesday night, a journalist is shot. Furthermore, my sources tell me that his mobile phone and money was still intact in his pocket, which would seem to suggest that the cause of death was not due to a robbery.
And Tom, your organization has listed South Sudan as the second deadliest country for journalists in 2015. In your own words, could you tell me how deadly is South Sudan?
The sad truth is it didn't used to be like this. It was quite a safe place to work. We had an incident in 2012, but this year we've had an unprecedented number of journalists killed. Five in Western Baragazal State, one in Jonglei State. And now here in the capital in Juba. So the numbers speak for themselves that things are getting more and more dangerous for journalists. And my fear is that as political uncertainties continue with this ongoing peace process discussions and ongoing conflict, we're not going to see that trend changing anytime soon.
And Tom, I just wanted to get your opinion on what can be done to protect the lives of journalists in South Sudan.
For one, we need the government, and particularly the security forces, to adhere to their own laws and stop, you know, arbitrarily arresting and closing down media houses without any recourse to the law or the Constitution, which protects press freedom. I mean, that would be probably the first step. Journalists themselves need to, you know, really consider their own security more in their reporting. You know, don't walk home alone, walk in a buddy system. Use sort of tactics for online communication, secure online communication. There's a lot that we could all do to prevent these kind of tragic incidences happening in the future.
That's Tom Rhodes speaking with our reporter Ian Bior earlier today from Nairobi. In Jonglei State, crime is also a big challenge. Authorities have arrested 17 people following a spike in crime. An official in the state capital, Bor, says a number of policemen are among those who were arrested.
The mayor of the Jonglei State capital, Nial Majang Nial, confirmed that several police officers are among the suspects. He says all 17 suspects are in custody and investigation are continuous.
Some of these people have been caught with marijuana, bangi, and other local stuff. So we have got them with a lot of looted items, and we are not yet in a position to disclose their identity because some of them are members of organized forces, and we are investigating their motives, and some of them were found in possession of weapons.
3 days ago, a motorist was killed in Bor by an unidentified gunman. A woman was murdered in her sleep 2 nights ago. And there has been a spate of nighttime robbery and killing in Bor. Humanitarian agencies in the state are also being targeted by criminals. Food supplies were stolen after a fire tore through a UN Food and Agricultural Organization warehouse in Bor in June. And more than $100,000 were stolen when the robbers broke into the Catholic Relief Services compound in Bor the same month. Media report says army deserters have gone on crime spree in some states, like other residents of Bor. Businessman Manyang Malue suspects members of the security forces are responsible for some of the crime being committed in the state capital.
Those who loot community, among them the armed forces, even I suspect those of police. I need the police to appoint his labor bus to make sure security of the town is really in place.
But other residents of Bor defend the security forces. John Garangayi says members of the South Sudan Army and Jonglei State Police are professional who would not be involved robbery or looting in the state. He blames
the youth, those who are not working, those who are jobless, robbing people and looting people's properties. All the citizens should identify the suspect and they should know who is missing in the area.
Mayor Nial is urging residents to report any suspected criminal activities that they see security official. Jonglei State Governor John Kong Nguyen called a security meeting last week to explore ways to stem the crime wave. None of the officials at the security meetings were able to provide detail about how the state intends to crack down on crime.
That report was coming from the capital, Bor. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Tong Tong by Sweet Jay from Yambio. We've been listening to Sweet Jay from Yambio with the song Tong Tong. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.